Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Greetings and welcome back to One True Pod, brought to you by DirecTV Stream. Get your TV together with the best of live and on demand. Learn more at DirecTV.com. We are the Big 12 Podcast on the Andy Staples Show and Friends podcast feed. Thanks as always for listening. My name is Jason Kersey, joined as always by my good friends, Max Olson, Sam Kahn Jr. Gentlemen, we've got a great show today. We're going to talk a little bit about Texas Tech's new head coach, but then we're going to be joined by former Longhorns running back Fozzie Whitaker to talk about the state of Texas football, the Longhorns having lost four in a row and, not looking too good. So that was a great interview. We'll get to that here in a little bit. But guys, how are we doing today?
I am good. Jason, Max, I spent 7 years at the Houston Chronicle. I spent 8 years at ESPN. I'm here at The Athletic, and I will die on One True Pod.
I love it.
Oh, man. Bold words. Yeah, man. Jason, let me tell you. We're going to talk about Joey McGuire. I suspect you don't know very much about Joey McGuire, and I don't mean that as a slight. Yeah. Let me just tell you, and it'd be awesome if we can get him on the pod. We're going to try. We may be able to pull that off, but Jason, if you talked to this guy for like 15 minutes, I think you'd pack up and move to Lubbock and go cover the Red Raiders.
Or I'd probably want to play for the Red Raiders is what it sounds like. I don't want to cover him. I think I might want to play for him if I talk to him.
When I heard that Lincoln Riley was missing during media availability on Tuesday, I was assuming he was going to go be Joey McGuire's offensive coordinator and go back home to Lubbock.
Yeah. No, we're going to have some repairmen out to my house because I did run through a wall yesterday while watching Joey McGuire's press conference while I was making lunch. Man, pretty stoked for Texas Tech. That is a really cool hire.
Yeah, obviously had an amazing career as a Texas high school coach. Still has all those connections. Did a really great job at Baylor as an assistant for the last 5 years. Is that right?
Do I have
that
right? Yep, that's right.
Joined Matt Rhule's staff. Just really exciting, I think, person for Texas Tech to have hired, because if anybody can recruit Texas, it's Joey McGuire. But all right, Sam, we'll start with you. I mean, how surprised were you that they went in this direction of hiring Joey McGuire? And how surprised are you that it happened this fast?
Oh, I'm quite a bit surprised. I thought Joey would at least get an interview, but I didn't expect him to get the job just because when they fired Matt Wells midseason, Kirby Hokut talked about the expectations and trying to get back. And you fired a coach with a winning record midseason, and certainly you were trying to get a jump. And they had Jeff Traylor as their initial target, clearly, which obviously he decided to stay at UTSA. And he's only been there 2 years and signed a massive extension, $2.8 million a year for the next 10 years. I didn't know UTSA had that kind of money, by the way. Meet. But I thought that Joey would maybe get an interview, but I had assumed that Joey would probably have to go to a Group of Five program, maybe a place like North Texas or Texas State or UTSA, had Jeff Traylor vacated and gone to Tech, and cut his teeth there before getting the job. But like Max alluded to earlier, you get in a room with a guy, which Texas Tech leadership and their search committee did, and he wins you over because the guy is full of energy. He's full of excitement, enthusiasm, and he's a guy that you want to play for. And I think with the key thing that Kirby Hokut said at the start of the search was, we want someone with strong Texas ties, get into the high schools, and build those relationships in recruiting. Well, who better to do that than Joey McGuire, who won 3 state championships at Cedar Hill, spent 14 years there, was a Crowley before that, inducted in the Texas High School Coach Association Hall of Honor. So I was a little bit surprised, but once I knew that he was going to get an interview and once I knew that Traylor was out and Sonny Dykes was kind of maybe possibly in play for TCU, to me that made sense. To me, rather than go try to get a retread somewhere else or try to pluck somebody from another part of the country, why not go to the profile you're looking for and find a guy that fits that profile who may have the upside of a Jeff Traylor before everybody's jumped on him? So I was impressed with Texas Tech landing on him because I think the upside for him is extremely high.
Well, I think one other thing that got Joe McGuire the job was just like his passion and enthusiasm for the job. And I think that you could tell that meant a lot to Kirby Hokut and the search committee there, just how badly this guy wanted to be the head coach of Texas Tech. And I think, you know, Sam, when we talked about a lot of these candidates here in the past few weeks and trying to figure out where these searchers are going, you would hear a lot of, you know, this person likes TCU over Texas Tech and stuff like that. If they're both open, they'd rather go to TCU, that kind of stuff. I'm sure that was probably part of it a little bit, is they would probably talk to people who either want to see what else is going to open up, or maybe they would prefer to go to Fort Worth. Joe McGuire wants to be in Lubbock, Texas. He's spent a lot of time in Lubbock, Texas. He has sent his daughter to school there, and she graduated in 2018. He's got a lot of buddies there. This is a job that he, you know, really coveted because he feels like he gets it. He gets the people of West Texas. He gets that, he, you know, this job's a little bit different from the rest in the Big 12 and in the state, and he thinks that's a good thing. And I think that went a long way. But also the timing of this, I'm curious what you guys thought of this. You know, I don't think that this is going to be the norm, as much as we've seen some pretty extreme stuff here with Texas Tech, with TCU, even Nebraska firing their offensive staff with two games left and making a decision on Scott Frost. I don't know that this is going to be the norm. I understand the early signing period part of this is important. But Texas Tech running a two-week search and getting it done before the season was over definitely surprised me a little bit. And I almost wonder if that was a little bit limiting in terms of who you could hire. Like if they offer Alex Grinch, Jason, you know, Alex Grinch is not going to leave Oklahoma with a couple games left in the regular season, right? Like that just, it's not possible. So in some ways being so aggressive, it also sort of meant you had to hire a non head coach and a non coordinator, probably a little bit. I'm curious what you guys thought about, hey, big boost to Texas Tech to get out there, build a staff, start recruiting, really kill it in December and November. But that part of it certainly was unique.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And to your point about Alex Grinch, I had that same thought yesterday. Like, I wonder what would they have done if Grinch had been offered that job?
He has to say no, right? I mean, the timing just doesn't make sense for him.
No, it does. Oklahoma's in the thick of the college football playoff race, undefeated, about to go on to this November run. It would have been really difficult, I think, for him to make that move permanently at that point, or to try to tread that line and recruit for both schools or whatever. You can sort of get away with that in December, I feel like, but in the thick of the regular season, that's impossible. And so that is interesting. And to your point about fit, Max, I don't know, something about the way you were describing that, it's like finding the best coach available versus finding the perfect fit. For some reason, my head went to Sam Pittman when you were talking about Joey McGuire. Like Sam Pittman.
This hire is Sam Pittman and Shane Beamer. This is what this hire is.
Exactly. Shane Beamer and Sam Pittman are perfect examples of they wanted to be head coaches, but they really wanted to be head coaches at this place. Like Sam Pittman wasn't interested in, you know, the Auburn job. He wanted to be the head coach at Arkansas. Shane Beamer wanted to be the head coach at South Carolina. And, you know, obviously at Arkansas, that's worked out really well for Sam Pittman. And things are looking pretty good for Shane Beamer. A hell of a win this week over Florida. So I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, I will tell you this. And by the way, if you haven't checked it out, go to The Athletic and read Max's piece on Joey McGuire. He did a really good job on Monday writing about Joey and his path I was jealous, you know, you and I have to arm wrestle over Joey, but anywho, I think this is a culture hire. That you said the Sam Pittman thing, that's exactly what I thought. This is a culture hire for this program. And one quote that he had on Tuesday in his introductory press conference that stood out to me was that when somebody asked him about his staff and what kind of philosophy he'll have in hiring a guy, he said, I don't care if they're the greatest X's and O's mind in the world. If they can't build relationships, they're not walking in that building. And to me, that speaks to kind of who he is and what he brings. He's not going to be the Lincoln Riley guy that's going to be the offensive wizard or he's not going to be the defensive mind who's, you know, going to out scheme you to death. He's going to be a culture guy who's going to set a tone in that building, who's going to build relationships and try to leverage that to get players that can get you win. And then obviously he's going to hire guys who he feels like are good enough to develop and do the X's and O's part.
Yeah, for sure. And that's that, you know, if you take the Sam Pittman example, you know, part of it is Sam Pittman hired, you know, really great established coordinators to start off his tenure, and Barry Odom had head coaching experience too, which I'm sure helps, you know, in some intangible way when you're new at this. And so who Joey McGuire surrounds himself with will be important. And, you know, look, as his good friend David Beatty learned. I mean, David Beatty is a similar example. David Beatty wasn't a coordinator at A&M when he got the Kansas job. Of course, Kansas was in, I think, much worse shape than Texas Tech is. I sort of goes without saying. You've got to figure out how to be a good game day head coach too. You know, you've got to get that part right. And you know, if you're decision making, all that's terrible, people will start questioning you fast. But I think if you can surround yourself, you know that this guy's going to recruit. I think he is going to be able to put together a good staff. You got to be the guy that you're right, Sam, brings the energy in that building. And you know, I think that will he win games? Like, I think there's going to have to be a little bit of patience there as a guy that's the first time FBS head coach. But I would also say there's probably some of that experience from Cedar Hill and winning 3 state championships at the high school level in Texas that not just gives you credibility in Lubbock and in that region and stuff, but also I would think, you know, gives people some trust that this guy actually does know how to run a program.
Oh, I mean, dude, before his introductory press conference, he got 3 commitments. Granted, yeah, they're from his old stomping grounds, Cedar Hill, but right, pretty good players. I mean, Sincere Massey, defensive tackle, who was committed to Arizona State, who he flipped. I've talked to coaches in this state who think he's one of the most underrated tackles in the country and defensive tackles in the country. So that to me, it's very rare that you get a commitment that quickly, you know, less than 24 hours into the job. So I think that just speaks to this is kind of what you're looking for. This is kind of what you're going to see from Joey, is a high energy, fast paced culture guy, so to speak.
Well, you know, real quick, guys, what impact does this have on Baylor? Baylor's a team that obviously is going, is still in the thick of the Big 12 championship race. They're going to need some help probably to get back into it, but they're still in it. They've got a big game this weekend against Oklahoma. Joey McGuire's been an extremely valuable member of that staff. I'm curious what you guys think about the impact this could have on Baylor.
I'll start with recruiting. I saw they had a recent decommitment, and it'll be worth seeing if where that ends up going. But yeah, it Dave Aranda said it on Monday, you'll have to shuffle a little bit with the staff and get somebody to take Joey's position at outside linebackers. But I think overall they'll still be fine because their coordinators are in place. Everybody else is in place. So I don't anticipate it'll have a huge impact, but certainly it's worth watching because you've got a guy who's been an imprint and had a big impact there. But I also think they have some similar guys on that staff like him, Sean Bell, David Wetzel, who they brought in, Matt Rule brought those guys in when he first got the job, that I think from a culture standpoint, yes, losing Joey stinks for them, but I don't think they're going to be tremendously affected, at least not in the short term.
No, and the other question is just how many people is he going to take from that building? You know, how many people are going to leave Baylor to go join Joey McGuire at Texas Tech? He took James Blanchard with him, which I thought was a pretty smart move on his part. As his personnel director, you know, did a really great job scouting players at Baylor. So I guess that'll be curious to see, you know, maybe when the season's over here, how many people want to leave Waco and go with Joey McGuire to Lubbock. And that's always, you know, it's especially, you know, kind of wild the way this all timed out that Texas Tech hasn't played Baylor yet too. So that matchup will be interesting. And that's also why Joey McGuire had to leave right away. You can't really stay in the building at Baylor and keep doing your job there when you're recruiting for Texas Tech.
Will be very interesting to monitor moving forward. Texas Tech hires Joey McGuire as their new head coach.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Now we're going to move into our interview. We're going to shift gears to Texas. Texas coming off another loss in which they were leading in the second half, a fourth straight. To talk more about that, we're going to bring on former Texas running back Fozzie Whitaker.
Texas is not back. The Longhorns are struggling. And to continue our conversation about them, we welcome in former Texas running back Fozzie Whitaker. Fozzie's an analyst on Longhorn Network, a Monday morning host on SiriusXM Big 12 Radio, and he played for the Longhorns back 2008 to 2011 before going on in the NFL, but now he's on the dark side with us media folks. Fozzie, welcome to One True Pod. How are you, sir?
What's going on, fellas, man? I appreciate y'all having me on. It's been a rough season so far, but at the same time, man, I'm enjoying my job covering the team, being on the dark side, as you say, and really getting to enjoy this side of life.
I'm particularly enjoying having Fozzie on because, Jason, I think I mentioned this to you earlier before we came on, but Fozzie was the first athlete I covered when I became a professional journalist. He, in 2004, he was a sophomore running back at Pearland High School. My first assignment at the Houston Chronicle was to go cover a homecoming game between Pearland and Clearbrook. And I only knew you as Foz Witt Whitaker by your legal first name, not the nickname. And so I was like, who's this sophomore running back who ran for like 160 yards that night? And, you know, I've got to know Fozzie, and now he's grown up, you know, got a job. He's in our industry now, and he's got family and everything. And it's just, I feel really old now.
Dude, I feel old too. I mean, one of the first big stories I did at ESPN was on Fozzie. So, I mean, yeah, Fozzie, we're getting old now, aren't we?
If y'all getting old, that means I'm getting old too, because now I'm the family man. That's I got a job as well in this position. So, but it's been crazy, the relationships that I fostered over the years. Like Sam said, since 2004, obviously with you whenever I was at Texas, Max, like it's been just really cool seeing how that relationship has fostered and allow us to be where we are today right now.
Yeah, so Fozzie, of course, we wanted to have you on to talk about the Longhorns. It's been a rough 4 weeks, 5 weeks. They've had an off week in between that, but they went from 4-1 to now 4-5, losing four in a row. And I'm just curious, from top line thoughts, Fozzie, what has gone wrong in your opinion, and how can Texas get this thing fixed?
Yeah, man, it's been crazy to see this kind of turn. You don't really expect it at a program like the University of Texas, with the type of talent, the type of depth that you typically recruit, the level of players, the level of coaching that you receive, and then the amount of resources that are input on a weekly basis to prepare for the team. You don't typically see a four-game losing streak happen, but since we're here, I think it can be attributed. Number one, I think injuries have played a huge part. You look at what Texas has been able to do whenever Casey Thompson was not dealing with that thumb injury. And then after that third quarter shot against Oklahoma, he's basically turned a corner and has gone the opposite way from a standpoint of his productivity. And then obviously the level of defense probably factors a lot into that, as the four games that Texas just played and lost against are the top four defenses in the Big 12. So that factors a lot into it. But then you also look at the injury to Jordan Whittington, which was a huge blow because that was Casey's main go-to target on third down. And where Texas has struggled is obviously in the second half, but really picking up first downs. They are terrible in the second half picking up first downs. And Jordan Whittington was a key guy for Casey to be able to be implemented into the pass game and allow him to be a go-to receiver that'll make those contested catches and those sure hands to be able to convert and keep the chains moving. So those two instances for sure, with Casey battling his thumb, Jordan battling his shoulder, his clavicle, and then obviously not being able to stop the run. This defense has not done it on a consistent basis, and they for sure haven't done it in any of the losses. They are second to last stopping the run in the conference. And anytime you come up against premier backs like the Big 12 has, I call this Big 12 running back country, because every team has a notable back that could be in a national campaign at any given point in time. And anytime you're in a conference like that, you got to be able to stop the run. And whenever Texas does not stop the run, obviously they get thrashed kind of in a similar fashion like Iowa State was able to do in the second half, in the same way Oklahoma State was able to do in the second half as well. They just got to figure it out in the second half. And it's not just all defense, but as well on the offensive side of the ball, I talk about the lack of productivity from a standpoint of being able to move the chains. Our offensive line has been a big struggle. There have been changes left and right. There have been injuries to the offensive line as well. It's just Denzel Okafor out for the season, and they haven't been the same since that moment. But at the same time, I wouldn't say that they were in a stable position even whenever he was healthy. So having a true starting five on the offensive front and then having a stout front seven on the defensive side of the ball to be able to stop the run probably has been a large part of the problem, along with the injuries that Texas has faced so far.
Fozzie, I've only seen Texas in person once, but the first half of the Oklahoma game, they looked like a team that could compete for championships. I mean, they looked that good. When you look at the differences between the first and second half, and I know you touched on it a little bit, but I mean, how frustrating is that to watch? And what do you think is the disconnect between the first and second half of these games?
Yeah, Jace, this is extremely frustrating because you look at a team that can obviously compete with, it seems like, anybody in the conference and possibly anybody in the country whenever you turn on the tape in those first 30 minutes of play. And all four of the games that they've lost in a row, they were leading at halftime, like you've already alluded to. But it's something that I'm not quite sure if it's the game plan that Sark is able to devise and the game plan that Coach PK on the defensive side is able to pull up that allows his players to play fast. But they are a complete different team right after halftime. And I'm not quite sure. Everybody talks a lot about the adjustments that a team will make at halftime. And it's not like you're changing your entire playbook or you're changing your entire philosophy. Just the opposing teams have found a way to grind down Texas's offense and defense. And then those big explosive plays typically end up breaking for the opposite team in the second half because of just probably the lack of depth and then the lack of attention to detail. And I vividly pull out a couple clips that come to my mind is I talk about the run game and how in the second half running backs typically have feasted well. And you can look at last week with Breece Hall, who had 17 yards in the first half and then finishes the game with close to 150, I believe, by the time it was all said and done. And I think it's just the attention to detail and the depth, run fits, gap fits. Every single week we see in linebackers not filling the right gap. Every single week we see two defensive linemen in the same hole, or we see a safety not filling in the spot that they're supposed to properly fit into. And it's just been that on the defensive side, and on the offensive side, can't get Bijan going. He's been hit in the backfield. It seems like almost every single play, they give up too much penetration from the interior O-lineman that basically stifles the run game. And then protecting Casey or Hudson Card, whoever is in the pocket at the time, trying to protect him on a play-by-play basis has been a struggle in and of itself. And I think it's more so coming down to just at the end, these guys being worn out and they can't find a way to put the level of attention and the level of detail. They can't put it into practice or into play in the second half of the games in a similar fashion that they were able to do in the first half.
You, Fozzie, for that Iowa State game, you were, I believe, in studio at LHN with Michael Griffin and Quandre Diggs, and I know Quandre always keeps it real, and I'm sure a bunch of your former teammates do too. So I'm curious, among, you know, your buddies that you played with, the guys you've gotten to know that play for this program, What are those conversations like for y'all over the course of a month like this? Because certainly you compare it to your playing days, and what it was like. And, I'm sure there's also probably a weird part of this where, you know, you're one of Strong, you're one of Herman, you're one of Sark now. It's kind of the same deal.
Yeah, definitely. And I was a part of that 2010 team that also had a 4-game losing streak for Texas. So I know both sides of what it feels like to be on the high, and I know what it feels like to be on the low. And in 2010, it was more so at fault because of the offense. We turned the ball over way too many times, and we didn't give our defense any help. And throughout the season, obviously, that bit us in the butt. We went 5-7, didn't go to a bowl game, and it seems like it was the end of the world. But the conversations that we had in that offseason were all about getting back to what we know how to do, which is, number one, competing at a high level. Every single practice, every single rep, every single play, every single time we stepped in the weight room, every single time we stepped on the field for workouts, it was all about competing and getting better. And whenever you have that natural competition, you know, taking effect each and every day, hopefully by the time the season rolls around, you know, your level of play has increased and you become a much greater impact on the team to have a positive effect on how the season turns out. In my senior year, I ended up getting hurt, but our team was moving in a much more positive direction than what they were back in that 2010 season where we only won 5 games. And I see some of the semblances of what was happening there. Our locker room wasn't terrible in 2010, but it wasn't the best. It wasn't like it was in 08. It wasn't like it was in 09, and it wasn't like it was in 11. And I see some semblance of that in this Texas team right now. Obviously, the big news media that just popped up was the Bo Davis, the chewing out of them leaving the Iowa State game on the bus. And that type of culture is not something that is warranted from the standpoint of the player that's recording the video and leaking it. That culture is not wanted within the ranks of former Texas players or current Texas players or just former players in general. Like, you know, you don't do that. There are certain things that should be said and left in the locker room or should be said and left amongst each other and shouldn't go no further than that. And for this kid to be able to kind of put that on display for everybody to kind of hear and kind of experience was it's shameful. And it's a disgrace to the Texas program. It's a disgrace to all the former players. And that's kind of the conversations that we have as former players. I talk with Quandre every single day. I talk with Adrian Phillips every day. I even talk with Snacks, Damon Harrison. He's another guy. He didn't go to Texas, but he's a guy in our circle that we always communicate with, whether it's on Facebook or Twitter or IG. And we're just talking about how the culture is not what it used to be. Jordan Hicks, MJ McFarland, obviously Michael Griffin, other people, Brian Arakpo, Jamal Charles, all these guys still live in Austin, Derek Johnson. And we bounce off a ton of ideas amongst each other. And that's not the type of culture that you want to create in the locker room. And that's not the type of culture that Texas wants to see done. And so you got to be able to figure out how to become a team and play as a team and really trust in each other if you want to have success. And right now, Texas isn't doing that. And us former players are extremely frustrated because we are seeing this team unravel and unfold over these past 4 weeks.
You mentioned the video, and me personally, I watched it a couple times. I didn't necessarily think that Bo Davis crossed a line or anything like that. And you know, within locker rooms and practices and stuff, you know, getting MF'd is part of the deal a little bit. But I am curious. I've seen a lot of former players, especially say on Twitter, that they agreed with the message and appreciated the message. And I'm curious how, you know, when you saw that, how did you kind of take it? And do you hope, as much as that's kind of airing out the dirty laundry in the team, like, do you hope that there's maybe something productive that comes out of that?
Absolutely. I agree 100% with Coach Davis. Whenever he was here, whenever I was here, it was the same message. Like, number one, whenever you come to the University of Texas, the message is you should not accept mediocrity. And if you are accepting being just okay or just average, then you're probably at the wrong place. Texas is not the place for you. You will get crucified if you think that going and on a four-game losing streak and thinking 4-5 right now is a good thing for Texas. That's never something – that's not a standard that Texas wants to uphold. So I'm 100% behind Bo Davis because, number one, on the outside looking in from the media perspective, you know, we're always trying to figure out, you know, what's really going on with this Texas team, right? We thinking that something – is happening and nobody's really saying nothing. Nobody's getting after the players. Everybody talk about the country club atmosphere or the feel that the players have that everything should be given to them, the entitled, kind of spoiled, the rich, you know, just, you know, Coach Brown used to call them hamburger eaters that would like kind of to be there to wear the jersey and eat hamburgers, but not really put in effort to help the team win type deal. Like you got to weed the locker room out with some of those bad nuggets. And me as a highly competitive athlete, that's what I thrive on. I want to see people competing at the highest level, giving it everything that they got to be able to get this team a victory. And it doesn't seem like all of the Texas players, whenever they step out on the field, especially in the second half, have that same type of mentality. And I see some of the people, and it's not just Texas players in general, but I see football players in today's time frame. They'll lose a game and be on Instagram 2 minutes later after the game is over, posting videos or posting photos about how great of a day or how great of a game that they had. But you just lost and gave up 200 yards rushing. Like, I don't understand the thought process of how it's all about me or it's all about the social, it's all about the gram whenever – you know, the old coach saying back in the Gap is talking about whenever you lose, there's a little piece of you that died. And that's how whenever I was at Texas, that's how losing felt to us. There was a piece of us that died. I still ain't got over it. Obviously, the national championship loss. That's a huge game and still a lot of accomplishments that happened in that season. We went undefeated in regular play, won the Big 12 championship. But like I lost a part of my life whenever Coke got hurt and then we could not surmount a comeback. And never was able to pull off a victory. And that is like, it doesn't sit well with me. And it's the same way in the NFL. Whenever I would lose a game with the Carolina Panthers, you see guys that would play around after the game as if nothing happened. And that's not something that should be taken lightly because these are people's livelihoods. Obviously, the kids aren't necessarily at stake because of, you know, they're still in school and they still have a long life to live. But these coaches, man, this is how they feed their kids. This is what Bo Davis is talking about. This is how I make my living. This is how I got to survive. And I'm not going to put it in the hands of somebody that doesn't want to give great effort or that doesn't want to be here. I'm not going to put it in your hands. So I'd rather you leave and we'll bring in somebody that wants to buy in, because the people that buy in, that's the best teams that you see. Guys that are involved in the locker room, guys that are giving each other high five, guys communicating with each other, hanging out, you know, off the field. Those are the teams that are close knit and usually have the most success. So I agree with what Coach Davis said. I hope there's more of it because there probably needs to be a reality check for this Texas team to say going 4-5 right now and losing the last four in the fashion that they did is not okay. So somebody got to be able to put them in check. And it seems like Coach Davis is that person.
Last thing for me here, Fozzie, from your experience in playing at the college level and playing in the NFL, what is the rule on the bus, on the sideline when you've lost? Like how is everyone, does everyone need to be, and obviously the point is taking this seriously, but does everyone need to be mad or sad after a game? Like how long are you supposed to do? Like maybe that for you, like you said, you lose a piece of yourself when you lose, you take it, you know, for you that comes easy. But like, what is like crossing the line there in terms of joking around or smiling or whatever after a game?
You know, typically it's usually underclassmen that don't make an impact in the game, don't necessarily play in the game and think, hey, well, they lost, but I didn't lose type aspect. That you see kind of joking around or people that just didn't play a lot. And that's in my experiences. Those are the ones who usually on the bus home are cracking jokes, being like overly loud, being, you know, showing videos and talking about stuff that doesn't pertain to anything related to the game. Like those are the people that you start getting in trouble with. And I'm not saying that it should be a cemetery on the way to the airplane and all the way from the flight to Ames to Austin. Like it shouldn't be that quiet and shouldn't be that dead. Obviously, you talk with each other and you have normal conversations like normal people would do. But and the effect of how it happened with this incident and how it was released last week, it looked like, from my opinion, Bo Davis was yelling at them as they were leaving the stadium and headed to the airport before they got on a plane to head to Austin. It looks like that. That's what I'm thinking, because that's whenever the loss is most fresh. You know, salt is in the wound. And you kind of expect guys to reflect on what happened and be able to make a conscious decision to know, hey, this probably isn't the best time to be cracking jokes and talking loudly and interrupting other people or whatever the case may be. And usually the upperclassmen get it, because they either have been there before or they know that this is my last time playing at Ames. This is my last three conference games. This is my last opportunity to go wear, you know, white and burn orange for the University of Texas. I don't want it spent losing 30-7 to Iowa State in the fashion that we did. And that's kind of the realization that you got to have, is those upperclassmen and those underclassmen, and getting everybody to understand, like, you don't have to be dead quiet, but let's reflect back on what we did. Let's reflect back on what we're trying to accomplish this season and still work towards something. And then as you get on the airplane, that's typically whenever everybody has gotten a little more loose and have found a way to be able to cope a little bit more with the loss. And then
that makes sense.
Then people fall asleep on the plane back home. So it's like everything will take care of itself, and then film review the following day, and then you bury it. But usually the bus ride, it's not too many people that should be talking, not too many people that should be laughing or joking whenever you get your butts handed to you 30-7.
And I imagine it should be a senior player chewing you out, not necessarily a coach too, right? You got to have those veterans on the team who are kind of the enforcers.
Yeah, and I think that's a little bit of the problem with Texas too, is you look on the defensive side of the ball, usually how whenever I play, the buses were split up offense and defense. And since Coach Davis was yelling, I'm assuming he was on the defensive bus if they split up like that. And you just don't see enough veteran leadership on a weekly basis. You don't see guys grabbing another guy by the face mask and say, hey, they just ran 100 yards on us. We got to get a stop here because we look embarrassing. You don't see it on the offensive side either. Hey, we got to find a way to protect Casey. We got to find a way to get Bijan going. We got to find a way to protect Hudson. If he gets the ball out, we got talented receivers. Xavier Worthy is the top receiver in the Big 12 right now. Like, you got to have those people that can step up and be able to hold other people accountable. And it seems like there's not a true guy that can do that. Last season, you had Sam Ehlinger, Joseph Osai, guys who had the chips on their shoulder, who had the clout behind their names that can really say, this is what it is, this is what it's going to be. But it seems like this year, there's no go-to guy like that on the offensive or the defensive side of the ball. So that's probably why Coach Davis had to step up and do what he did.
Fozzie, last one for me, and this is kind of a big picture question, but I think that probably when you signed with Texas, you knew everybody loves to hate Texas. I mean, it's just sort of it's part of the deal, I think. Tale as old as time, but the last 10 years, and you were there when Texas was at its peak. I mean, 2008, 2009, you guys were great. What's it been like to watch Texas not just become a team that people love to hate, but almost a punchline? I mean, Sam kicked us off by saying the Texas is back thing, which has become kind of a punchline through the years. You know, everything that happens gets magnetized and gets blown up. The Joshua Moore thing, for example, this year. I mean, I saw that guy go lights out against Oklahoma in the first half. Everybody sort of jumped on that. There's this story with the assistant coach's girlfriend and a monkey. There's all this stuff that keeps happening. What is that like as a former player to watch not just you guys be hated, but sort of laughed at? Does that bother you?
Absolutely, it bothers me. You look at what the locker room effect is, especially while I was playing at the next level. The biggest bragging right you can hold over somebody is that your team beat their team in college. And it's like a ton of guys in the NFL have those types of bragging rights. They have those type of bets where you got to come in to the next day to team meeting room wearing the opposing team's colors or wearing a shirt or jersey, whatever the case may be, to kind of put your bragging rights on display in front of all your peers. And that's kind of where the pinnacle was. If you're able to make it to the next level, it's like those bragging rights. Whenever I was playing, obviously Texas didn't have a ton of those bright moments in the big lights to that degree that I experienced whenever I was there with Colt McCoy. But it's just been frustrating. And then at the same time, Like, I don't know what the answer is, because it's been this way, like you just pointed out, for the past 10 years. And the crazy thing about it is there's been four different head coaches at the University of Texas, and it's still the same. There have been four different regimes of players and athletes that have come through Texas, and it's still the same. You know, there used to be an excuse kind of built in. Well, he hasn't gotten his guys in yet, right? That's what the excuse for Charlie Strong was. Okay, well, you give him time to get his guys in, still underperforms. Up next, Tom Herman. He hasn't gotten his guys in. Okay, well, they went a Sugar Bowl and got to the Sugar Bowl only because Oklahoma went into the playoffs, but they had some success. And then the following week, it turns out that all that success seemed like it was a dud and a disappointment. And then now he's gone. And then now you're like, the same thing. It's a revolving cycle where we like, oh, wait until Steve Sarkisian gets his guys. You know, he hadn't got his guys, but the one guy that he was able to touch, Xavier Worthy, is on a freshman All-American pace. Well, how long until this fan base says, oh, well, we've had enough of that. Let's see if we can find somebody else and see what the answer is. And it's like, it's exhausting because, like I said, it's been four different head coaches over the past decade, and nobody seems to have the answer, which is the more strange thing to me. It's kind of like the Texas Longhorns are like the punchline of how the Dallas Cowboys are perceived. You know, everybody loves to bag on the Cowboys whenever the Cowboys aren't doing good. But whenever they are doing good, it's kind of like, oh, okay, it's kind of expected. You should be doing good. You have all the resources, all the money, this and that. And it's just, it's painful to watch because Texas hasn't been back at the level that a lot of people expected them to be with the way that they were recruiting, with the resources put in, and who was leading them at the helm.
Tremendous insight, Fozzie. Really appreciate having the perspective of a former player. Fozzie Whitaker, former Texas running back, Longhorn Network analyst, and host on SiriusXM Big 12 Radio. Catch him on Monday mornings there. Fozzie, thanks so much for joining us today. We really appreciate you doing it.
Yes, sir. I appreciate y'all having me on. And, man, I'm hoping that Texas is able to make a turn for the better moving forward.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, that was great stuff from Fozzie Whitaker, former Texas running back, Longhorn Network analyst. Really appreciate him hopping on. A lot of great insights.
I got to adopt there. That hamburger players. I love that term. I'm gonna take that one with
stuff.
Me. Yes.
It's great stuff. Great stuff from Fozzie. All right, now our favorite time of the week, picks. First, let's update the standings. Sam is really starting to pull away at 45-32. You're making a lot of people a lot of money out there, Sam.
Yes, sir.
I'm in second, 37-40, but Max, you are right on my tail at 36-41. You have made an impressive comeback from where you were.
I don't know if I'd say I'm on your tail. I think it's just possible you're coming down to my level, which has to be alarming.
I was trying to give you credit, man.
I don't know. I kind of look at it. I don't know if y'all saw that picture that went on the No Talk Context College Football account the other day with DeMarvin Leal right behind Bo Nix, and it looks like
he's about to
like a horror movie. I think I picture that with Max's is DeMarvin Leal and Jason's Bo Nix right now, one spot behind in the standings.
So okay. Who are you in that scenario then, Sam?
I must be Jimbo Fisher on the sideline calling all the plays pulling all the right strings at this point.
Making like making $1 million.
Making the money.
Yeah,
that's right. Because he's the money maker there. So
yeah. Well, let's see if we can't close the gap a little bit this week, Max, with Sam. We got leading off, guys, is sort of the game of the week in the Big 12.
Dude, all these lines scared me this week because there's
it's not easy.
There's not one line that's like 3 points this week.
Yeah. Yeah. No, totally. We're going to start off with Oklahoma Baylor, which is OU's chance to really start impressing the College Football Playoff Committee, because they clearly haven't thus far. Remain number eight in the latest rankings. They're 9-0, but they're number eight behind a bunch of one-loss teams. But this will be their first chance to play a team ranked by the committee, which Baylor, interestingly, stayed at number 13 despite falling a lot lower than that in the AP and coaches poll. So the committee obviously likes Baylor, even though they're coming off that TCU loss. OU is a 5.5-point favorite. And we can talk a little bit about this game since it's such a big deal. 11 a.m. kickoff on Fox. Max, you want to start this one off? What do you think about this OU Baylor game?
I was saying it as a bit a few weeks ago, and now I honestly believe it. Like, Caleb Williams could probably take the Heisman lead this week if he has a big game. It's still just, like, there for the taking for somebody.
Yes. Yep. It is. It is.
And this is a pretty good defense, too. So, I mean, I think it's – like, I think if he goes off in this game – I mean, when you guys have to fill out your Heisman straw poll ballots on Sunday morning, you're going to think about it, right?
Well, I must admit,
I'm not like twisting your arm here. I'm just curious what you guys say.
No. I must admit, you know, Caleb Williams had 1/3 place vote in this week's Heisman straw poll, and that came from this guy.
Wow. So,
wow. I know that probably makes me seem a little bit like a homer, but the truth is I think he's played to that level. He has the number two QB rating in the FBS right now, 14 touchdowns, one interception. He's averaging almost 10 yards a rush. Like, what's not to love about this guy?
It'd be fun if he has like 22 touchdowns and is a Heisman finalist, you know, like it's, by the way, there's definitely been some homer picks going on in that Heisman straw poll, because I see Marcus Jones got another third place vote.
That would be me. Hey, come on, man. Marcus Jones, dude, 4 kick return touchdowns, 2 interceptions, 10 catches. Come on, man. There is not a player doing well. He should win the Horning at the very least.
Yes, that's correct.
But yes, I'm being the homer guy picking Marcus Jones in the Heisman.
No, I think that there's a part of me that just thinks – like, I think I'm going to take Oklahoma to cover the 5.5 here. Part of me just thinks it's Oklahoma in November. Like, don't overthink it.
Right.
But I'm not, to be clear, I'm not saying I'm off Baylor just because of the TCU game either. Like, I still think this game is going to be fantastic.
Yeah, I'm not off Baylor either, just because I thought that was a fluky performance. It was a different situation. Buzzsaw, TCU, emotional win for them. No Gary Patterson. Very, very different scenario. And I told you guys on this podcast last week, that team has enough talent to win just about any game it has out there. And I had a feeling it would go that way. So I wasn't surprised to see that. The one thing I will say I'm concerned about with Baylor is Gary Bohannon threw one interception through the first 7 weeks, and he's thrown 4 in the last 2. So that concerns me a little bit. But that said, I look at this roster and it's the 2-deep is filled with, I believe, if I counted correctly a couple weeks ago, 18 guys who were on the team in 2019 that went to the Big 12 championship that lost to Oklahoma twice. But you guys remember they were up 28-3 in that game, that first match. And obviously they went down to the wire with them in the Big 12 title game. I think Baylor's going to cover here. I do not know if they're going to win, but I do think given the experience and the depth on this team, I think they'll bounce back. And I think they'll cover the 5.5.
It's also worth noting last year, Baylor came to Norman and played Oklahoma really tight. It was one of their tighter games there at the end of the season. So the Oklahoma-Baylor series has been very interesting really for the last decade, starting with Robert Griffin III winning the Heisman because of his play against OU. So it's a fascinating series. I mean, heck, even the year Baylor went 1-11 or 2-10, Matt Rhule's first year, they still took OU to the wire.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Having said all of that, I'm still picking OU.
You mentioned the series and like you got the blackout game on, I think, Thursday, right? That was amazing. Back in Floyd Casey. You also had the epic game where, do you remember the one where Mike Stoops lost his mind because the Oklahoma had the cornerback who had the club on one hand and they couldn't
Julian Wilson.
They couldn't stop anything against Baylor. Man,
They were playing like 15 yards off the line of scrimmage.
That's right.
Yeah, and the fans booed. That was really, you know, that was a sign of things.
Didn't Mike open the box after that game? I want to say
that was yeah, that was one of his last games on the sideline.
Yeah,
was that game?
They've played some good game. I mean, I think I remember Baker had a game in Waco that was a real shootout. That was one that really helped establish Oklahoma, I think, in, I want to say, 15 too. I mean,
yeah.
These teams have played some awesome games. I'm expecting another one.
Yeah. So I'm going to pick OU to cover the 5.5, but I wouldn't be surprised at all if it's closer than that. This has been a fun series. So that one's at 11 a.m.
Max, did you pick? Did you end up sticking with Oklahoma?
I'll take OU to cover the 5.5.
Gotcha.
All right. So we got two OUs and one Baylor. That'll be a lot of fun to watch. Next up, we got West Virginia at Kansas State. Kansas State, a 6-point favorite. Who wants to take this one?
Max, I'll give a 4 to you on this one.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Neither outcome would surprise me, really, with this. I mean, this feels a little bit of a coin flip to me. And in some ways, I wonder if 6 is too many points. But I'll take K-State covering the 6.
Yeah, I think so. I'm agree with you. This one is hard to read and it's hard to figure out, but K-State a little bit rolling. They've won 3 in a row. I think I'm going to take the Wildcats to win here. They're bouncing back. Things have turned ever since that big Texas Tech win. After we joked about Chris Klieman asking for positivity, well, he's given some things to be positive about now. So
for sure.
So I'm going to take the Wildcats to cover here.
This is a tough one because I like you guys, I could kind of see it going either way. West Virginia has been a little bit of a confusing team this year. As much as I do like Kansas State, I think I'm going to take West Virginia to cover this one here.
Probably
I think I'm going to take the Mountaineers. All right. Next up, we got Iowa State at Joey McGuire's new home, Texas Tech. The Cyclones coming off the big thorough victory over Texas are a 10.5-point favorite in Lubbock. Sam, you want to go first?
Yeah, I will take Iowa State to cover. I think that they're hitting that point of the year where they're starting to play really well. Tech is, you know, obviously new coach, but he won't be on the sideline. Sonny Cumbie's still the interim coach, so he'll still be calling things. And a little bit of uncertainty at the quarterback. I guess as we're recording this right now, they haven't named a starting quarterback, but I think they will have by the time this comes out, either Donovan Smith or Henry Columbia. And Tyler Shuck is still working his way back from injury. But I think Iowa State right now is a little bit too good. I could see Tech covering, but I'm just not going to go with it right now. I think the Cyclones are just a much better team. They're playing better. So I'll take Iowa State and give the 10.5.
You know, Jason, for your Heisman purposes, Breece Hall is back to being the third leading rusher in the country.
It's going to give me something to think about.
He is. You know, Sam, one thing I thought that was interesting on Tuesday is you heard Kirby Hokut, I think, say maybe a couple times that we're going to like really celebrate when we get to a bowl game. And, you know, Texas Tech has 5 wins. They just need one more. So I do sort of wonder, is this it of the 3 that they have left? Is this the game they could go out and win? And 10.5, there's a part of me that wonders if it's too many points a little bit, even with what Iowa State just did to Texas. I'm going to take Iowa State to cover the 10.5. And, yeah, the quarterback situation probably is a little bit of pushes me over the edge there. I think Iowa State will cover this, and they're playing really well. I would be surprised if they laid an egg in this one.
I agree. I think Iowa State's starting to play really well. I think they cover the 10.5, and really, you know, next week they come to Norman to play Oklahoma. It's really this is Iowa State's time of year. It's Oklahoma's time of year. That's going to be, I think, a pretty interesting game. But they got to get through Texas Tech first, and I think they will. Next up, Kansas at Texas. Guys, Texas is a 30.5-point favorite. Am I being tempted by the fighting Lance Leipold's again? Because I believe that I am.
Yeah.
I'm doing it. Let's do it, guys.
Yeah.
Let's be heroes.
I have to, just because Texas.
We have to.
I said it last week with the Iowa State game. Texas has to prove it to me. They have to prove it to me. And they have not. For 4 weeks, they have not. And
guys, 30.5 is too many points.
especially with this team and this particular history between these two teams. We all remember what happened in 2016, but they also had a scare in the Les Miles era as well in Austin. I believe, what was it, 50 to 48 was that? Yeah, in 2019, 50 to 48, they had to get a field goal at the end to win it. Heck, in 2018, it was 24 to 17 in Lawrence. So three of the last four here, last year they got canceled because of COVID-19. Three of the last four here have been well with, actually the last four have been within 30, but three of the last four have been pretty close. So I'm taking Kansas to cover.
I'm taking Kansas to cover too. I have to. I mean, Kansas is worse than the country in stop rate, but Texas isn't very good either. And, you know, certainly when you look at the schedule, yeah, sure, this is the get right game that Texas needs. And it's a big one for, I mean, who's starting at QB this week, Sam?
That's a great question. He, Steve Sarkisian is supposed to let everybody know at Thursday morning.
Okay.
That so again, by the time you listen to this, he will probably have named a starter between Hudson Card and Casey Thompson.
Maybe their run game just absolutely goes off on Kansas and it doesn't really matter and all that. It's not hard to envision a way that Texas wins by 31, but this week I feel like that's a little bit too much respect to give Texas.
I mean, they lost Joshua Moore, who was their leading receiver last year. It was a starting receiver this year. Steve Sarkisian said he's headed to the transfer portal. Obviously, as Fozzie mentioned earlier, there's no Jordan Whittington, which has hurt this team.
Yep.
And the line play hasn't been very good. So I just can't see. Yeah. Could I see
Jason,
them?
Jason, you doing it? You with us?
I'm in. I'm all in on the Jayhawks to cover. I don't think they'll win, but I am all in on them to cover because 30 and a half.
I'm sorry. I cut you out there, Sam. What were you saying?
No, I said, I just think there's so many issues on this team right now.
Yeah.
And this could be the game. This could be a game where they bounce back and maybe they do go and win by 40. But again, like I said, they have to show me. They have to prove it to me.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Who are some teams right now out there that you would think a 30 and a half line in favor of Texas is appropriate right now? I'm not sure there are that many teams out there that I would say I definitely think Texas will beat them by 31 points.
Rice, who they already beat 58 to nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not very many of them. There's not. Maybe some FCS teams. Maybe.
But I do think Kansas will keep this one a lot closer than the 30 and a half. So we need to go back at some point and listen to every podcast and listen to how many times we've picked. I guess I could go back through my notes and figure it out. How many times we've picked Kansas?
We definitely picked too many times. We definitely did.
And we did, what was it, like a week ago or 2 weeks ago, we were saying they've never covered a game this year?
Yeah. Yeah, it was when they were 0-6.
Oh, before the OU game, they had never.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And so
OU is the first team they covered against.
I think we all jumped out on them that week and then they covered that very week.
Well, I mean, it's the transitive property. I mean, I think, you know, OU was a tiny bit better than Kansas and OU was better than Texas. So I think, you know, Texas is maybe a tiny bit better than Kansas.
Yeah. Love it. All right, so we all go with the Jayhawks. Last current Big 12 game that we'll pick, TCU at Oklahoma State. Now, Oklahoma State is a 13.5-point favorite. Oklahoma State's defense has been unbelievable. Jim Knowles certainly belongs in the conversation for the Broyles Award. I think there's a good chance he wins it. But TCU may have found itself a little something offensively last week in one Chandler Morris.
Your favorite, Boomer Sooner, the former Oklahoma quarterback. This is why Lincoln Riley didn't want to let him go.
Yeah, how did that feel, Jason, just watching Chandler Morris go crazy?
I mean, it was fun. Look, Chandler Morris showed some flashes last year. He would come in on some goal line packages and stuff there at times, and he showed some flashes last year when he got his opportunities. Now, Lincoln Riley was upset when he transferred. I think now we can all see why Chandler Morris made the right decision. Not only is he playing, but he wasn't going to play over Caleb Williams. So probably made the right call. But yeah, it was pretty cool to see him out there playing as well as he did. And it sounds like he's going to start again this weekend in Stillwater. I think this is an interesting game, and I don't know who wants to take this first.
I'm going to tell 13 and a half. This line scares the hell out of me. because of what I said last week, and I stick by it. TCU's got enough talent to beat just about anybody in this league. They haven't played well, obviously, for a number of reasons. They have injuries. Zach Evans sounds doubtful again for this game. He's got a turf toe, is what Jerry Kill said. By the way, starting to get actual injury information out of TCU now that there's a new coach or an interim coach. But, man, they played so well, and the receiving core that they have, Chandler played so well. But I go back to Oklahoma State, man. The way they play defense, the way they run the ball, I'm going to go ahead and take Oklahoma State's cover. They're at home. It's a big game. They know they've got to win every game here on out to get themselves in the Big 12 championship game. Of course, they're going to have the Bedlam, which is going to be a challenge, but they've got to win every game they can. So I like the urgency. I like the way they've played. Like you said, just what they've done defensively. I'm going to take Oklahoma State to cover.
Yeah, I am too. That was kind of my curiosity, Sam, as I was looking at this game is, does the emotion wear off a little bit for TCU this week, or do they just go out and ball out again? And I think when you look at the schedule for them, there should still be that kind of urgency here in terms of how do you get to six. You know, you got Kansas next week. So the question is, and that would get you to five. So between your two road games left, you have a better chance of winning in Stillwater or winning in Ames at the end of November. I think this is the one you probably want to try and go get. I'm going to take Oklahoma State to cover the 13.5. But part of me does kind of think that's too many points.
I don't feel great about it. I can promise you that. I think Oklahoma State's going to win this game, but 13 is just a lot.
Yeah.
I'm going to take TCU to cover this. Because I think Oklahoma State's defense is great. Still have questions about their offense, and TCU seems to have found something. I would also point out TCU has won, I believe, 3 of the last 4 against Oklahoma State, including some games where Oklahoma State was ranked higher.
Yeah.
So they've been a little bit of a thorn in Oklahoma State's side. I don't know that I'm necessarily saying I think TCU wins the game, but I think they cover the
I remember last year's game was a mess. I remember.
Yeah. Yeah. That was not a great loss for Oklahoma State last year. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so we're through the current Big 12. Let's move into our future Big 12. BYU off this week, so we won't. So this will be our second straight week of not picking BYU because they played Idaho State last week. So let's start with the number 5 Cincinnati Bearcats playing at UCF, 23.5 point favorite. At a certain point, Cincinnati's gonna have to start blowing some people out, right?
Yeah, at a certain point, we got to get Justin back on this podcast. Justin Williams back on this podcast too to explain what's going on there.
Yeah. Yeah. 23.5 point favorite on UCF. That line seems a little big to me based on some recent history.
Yeah, but, boy, South Florida gave Houston a run. Timmy McClain was giving Houston's defense the blues. He had 3 touchdowns. He threw for almost 300. And Dana Holgerson was not happy after that game. So South Florida could mess around and cover. But, boy, Cincinnati, they have not looked good as of late. It's on the road. It's in Tampa.
Those 2 goal line stands were crazy against Tulsa too.
Yeah, yeah. Because they haven't tracked correctly, and because South Florida looked the way they did against Houston last week, I'm gonna take the Bulls to cover the 23.5 against Cincy.
Interesting.
It pains me to say because Cincy needs the style points, and they're an inch closer to the playoff now at number 5. But I think they with a road game and the way this has gone so far these last few weeks, I'm going to take USF to cover.
That I get the thinking, and 23.5 does seem like a lot, especially with how they've been playing lately. One thing, and when I was looking at USF that stood out, I like Jeff Scott a lot. I for his time at Clemson, did a really good job there. They only have 1 FBS win in his 2 seasons there so far here. So I can't see the upset happening, but I do wonder a little bit if it's too many points. I'll take Cincy 23.5. I don't feel very good about it.
That's kind of where I am, Max. I'm going to take Cincy, but I don't feel great about it. I feel like they need this. They need to blow somebody out. With the way the committee obviously views them, looking for a reason, I think, to not put them in, as we've talked about many times. They need to go out and have a big game. So yeah. I will I will
pick
them to do that.
We're just going to keep saying that on the pod every week until it happens, you know?
Yeah, yeah, 100%. All right, next up, we got UCF at SMU. SMU, 7.5-point favorite.
Man, I have trouble taking SMU. They are on their November swoon. So the last three seasons, they've started a combined 20-0. And after those undefeated starts, they are 4-8. November is not a kind month to this team. UCF did not look great in the win over Tulane. They had to get a fourth quarter touchdown to win it. But until SMU shows, until SMU shows me that it can get off of this November swoon that it goes through every month, I cannot take them to cover. I'm going to take UCF to cover this one.
Yeah, I like UCF plus 7.5 as well. I think UCF is looking like they're on track now for about an 8-9 win season here. They've got the last games they have are UConn and USF, so it's looking pretty good for UCF to finish out here. And I just, I think that 7.5. I don't know if I see UCF winning outright, but I think 7.5 is maybe a little too generous right here.
I agree. I think I'm going to go with UCF as well. And finally, Houston at Temple. Houston, a 24.5-point favorite. Houston getting no love in the college football playoff committee, Max. What is going on there?
They're taking their time. They took their time on UTSA, and they finally ranked UTSA last week. And so now we're going to have to wait another week, and they'll be 9-1 next week, and then I think they'll finally get in. For the conspiracy theorists out there, they may be holding Houston down so they can have a reason not to put Cincinnati in at the end of the day.
That's so good. I like that. I think it's one of those deals where I think probably AP voters, you know, just you tend to maybe go by records a little bit more and how you sort. And committee doesn't care about your record. Like if you're Houston being one last team, doesn't matter to them because Houston lost to a Power 5 team in Texas Tech. And Houston, other than SMU, doesn't really have a lot of quality victories in their eyes. So I get why they're not in the top 25. It seems pretty petty to me. Also, Penn State, some of these you just don't really totally get at the back end of it. But also, having done the mock selection before, you know, the process is it's
convoluted.
It is in terms of the voting. I'm sure there's some people in that room that think Houston should be in the 25. I think Houston's going to cover this 24.5 against Temple. This Temple defense is absolutely terrible. over their last four games, which they've all lost, they are getting outscored 180-27.
Golly, that's awful.
That's not good.
Got beat 49-7 by UCF and 45-3 by ECU. Yikes!
I think they're probably getting ready for Fixum to have a coaching search there. I would think at Temple. I think Houston is Houston's going to be able to, just like last week. I don't know if they're going to hit, you know, a bunch more 98-yard runs or whatever, but I think Houston's going to be able to put up some points in this one and cover the 24.5.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Clayton Toon's playing really, really well. Last two weeks, sure, he was great against SMU. He was great last week against South Florida, playing probably the highest level he's played since he's been on campus. So offense is getting rolling. Defense, I think they'll bounce back. They had a rough go at it last week, but that defensive front against this Temple team, I don't think they'll have much trouble. So I'm going to take Houston to cover.
And I'll round things out by agreeing with you and taking Houston to cover as well.
So go Cougs.
That wraps up our picks. We'll see if we can make up any ground on Sam whatsoever. I doubt it, but we're doing our best here.
The real question is, am I going to pass you this week?
I'm watching for.
It's a lot more interesting than Chase and Sam at this point, is the battle for second.
That's right. Sam is Georgia in this scenario. There's there's the unquestioned number one, and then there's some pretty flawed people behind him here.
100%. Thanks, guys, and thanks to all of you, as always, for listening. We're here every Thursday in the Andy Staples Show and Friends feed, so if you haven't already, please subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also find our stories on The Athletic. If you're still not a subscriber to The Athletic, you can sign up with our latest promotional offer at theathletic.com/onetruepod. You're going to get comprehensive coverage of the Big 12 season and so much more. So now is a great time to sign up. We'll see you next time.